Welcome into another podcast on Scoops with Danny Mac, presented by Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert. Visit him at thehomeloanexpert.com. Well, besides having a book coming out that focuses a lot on Keith's Cardinal days, had the chance to visit with the former first baseman about his time in St. Louis and New York, an appearance on Seinfeld, his broadcasting career with the Mets, his love of reading. By the way, in my opinion, there's no doubt that Keith Hernandez is a Cardinals Hall of Famer and just maybe a baseball Hall of Famer. From what I've seen, he's the best fielding first baseman in the history of baseball. Well, enjoy. He's always one of the more entertaining figures in the sport, and that's Keith Hernandez.
Now Hernandez trying to drive in a run, swings in a long one to center field. Way back his office near the wall, and is up against the wall. The run is in to make it 2-0, and there goes Hernandez for third. They're going to bring him home. He's going to try to score. The throw home, late. Inside the park home run, and he's exhausted at home plate.
Hernandez, a five-time All-Star, MVP, won 11 consecutive gold gloves at one point at first base, and was on two world championship teams, the 1982 Cardinals and the 1986 Mets. Recently, I sat down with Keith and talked about his playing career and beyond. When you think back in your time in St. Louis, there's so many different things that probably come to mind, but how about for you in just trying to encapsulate the time in St. Louis, what comes to mind?
Oh, gosh, it's a lot of things because there's so much history. That's where I got my professional start. I mean, there's George Kitzel, there's Bob Kennedy Sr., there's Joe Ducky Medwick, Ken Boyer, a lot of people that were there for me, my formative years. And then ultimately the World Series in 82, of course. I mean, that's the Cardinals hadn't won the World Series since 67, so that was a highlight for me.
Two have been retired. Gorman Thomas has proven to be a top customer. Sitter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals! Porter throws his mask into the air. The players converge around the mound. The police arrive on the scene. The canine patrol and the mounted patrol. Some fans manage to get on the field, but they needn't do that, and they won't be out there very long. The Cardinals have won the game 6-3. The Cardinals have won the National League pennant, and the Cardinals have won the 1982 World Series.
But also, a lot of the guys that came up through the chain that I played in the minor leagues with all through those tough years. I mean, I wouldn't want to go through those 70s again early
some
in
tough
my
years.
Career. I was some up and down years. It was very, very stressful. And but you know what? It's a hard road. And like my dad used to say, anything worthwhile doesn't come easy. So it certainly didn't.
And your dad, it's interesting, your dad was such a big influence in your career, and your connection to the Cardinals, even though you're in California, dates back to him taking you to a ball game. Yep. And Stan the Man is there, and he's a guy that you idolized, obviously.
Well, Stan was on his way out when I was, 63 was his last year, so I would have been 8 years old then, and let me see, 9 years old. Stan would leave us tickets at the ball game when they play the Giants at Candlestick, and we'll get in the clubhouse. And so, you know, I was a Cardinal fan. I was sold on that right from the get-go, and plus the uniform.
You love the uniform.
Oh, the uniform's great. The socks are great. Socks are overlooked. I used to show my stripes on my socks.
Well, it used to be mandated too, right?
No, because George wore the pajamas.
Oh, did he? Okay.
George covered them up. A lot of guys, you know.
Well, George Hendrick, yeah.
Yes, George Hendrick, so yeah. To be more specific. I think I was one of the only guys that showed the stripes. I mean, if style was to wear them down low.
Yeah.
And I wore them very old-fashioned where I tucked them underneath.
Sure.
And then folded them, you know. It was a process to get my pants on.
Stan the Man would come then to the clubhouse all the time as you're playing. Can you describe what that was like and being around him just when he'd come in spring training or pop in the clubhouse and talking to Stan because you had seen him as a kid?
Well, Stan, I have one memory. Stan and Gibson came down, talked first minor league camp in 1972. I was 18. And Gibson, who didn't want to be there, and Stan, who loved being around people,
Right.
It was like 700 kids there, 600 kids. And they made, both made a speech, Stan on hitting and Gibby on pitching. And I remember Stan trying to talk about hitting and just getting lost for words and fumbling. And finally he just threw his bat down and said, oh, look, fastball, see the ball and hit it. And he walked off. But Stan would come in the clubhouse, too, when I played, very rarely.
Yeah.
But, you know, Stan was always an affable guy.
Right.
He always smiled, you know, what do you say, what do you say? And it was genuine. He genuinely was a guy that liked people.
You know, people may not understand this that are listening to this, but they recognize your great years in St. Louis. Then you go on to be a part of the Mets. If you weren't a part of the Mets, you were a part of the Pirates, let's say, or the White Sox or some other team, mm-hmm. it would have been different. But in that time of the 80s, they were the hated Mets. But the point I'm trying to make is you love the Cardinals. You absolutely loved the St. Louis Cardinals.
I did, and it was a very sad day when I got traded. And, you know, a lot of things were when I made a few mistakes. I mean, I probably would have wound up staying there a long time if, you know, Gussie Bush was going to pay me. I mean, I was
sure.
At the end of my contract, my five-year deal. And I don't know to this day if they would have ponied up and to keep me in New York. But, you know, I was almost traded to Houston for Ray Knight, which is Whitey. And I got to believe when he got Jack Clark later that, you know, that could have been if they didn't want to pay me, I could have wound up in San Francisco. And that would have been a disaster because playing in Candlestick in that horrible park and the horrible weather.
Right.
And the horrible teams at that point, the ownership, that I wasn't going to make a difference with that organization. And then just to be the added pressure of having to play in front of my dad all the time, I that would have been. So what turned out to be when I got traded to the Mets, I remember my reaction was the Mets, my gosh, they're a last place team. You know, little did I know the talent that they had in the minor leagues. They weren't squandering their draft picks while they were at the bottom of the barrel.
I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. If you're even considering buying a home this year, get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. Don't be the only offer on the table without a pre-approval letter from thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert LLC.
Is 82, when you look at that infield yourself, Ozzy, Tommy, Kenny Obergefell, is it the best defensive infield that you've been a part of?
Well, I hate to make comparisons. I don't think there's ever been a shortstop that there can't possibly be anybody that played a shortstop like Ozzie Smith.
The pitch. Swing and a base hit into the... Oh, what a play by Ozzie! Unreal! Unreal! Listen to the crowd! Here's a swing and a line drive. Diving catch by Ozzie. What more do these folks get to see? What a play by Ozzie. Another phase of the highlight. You couldn't believe that. Listen to them. They're on their feet. 45,000. And you, well, I'll just let you listen.
Unarguably the greatest defensive shortstop of all time. It was just too agile. It was like Spider-Man out there.
Right.
And, you know, I think I was up there in the top five. I ever played the game at first base. Tommy Herr was a very, very good fielder and very smart player. It was not only that we were good with our gloves, Obi also, we were also smart. All four of us had baseball instinct and knew how to. A lot of plays are scripted in the field. You know, you work on them in spring training, and they're kind of rote. If a situation arises that's a normal play, you react to it because of all the drills in spring training. But there are plays that come up that aren't scripted, that the unusual play, and you have to think real quick on your feet. And all four of us had that ability.
I look at you as the best defensive first baseman that ever played the game, and then you watch how the game is played today. Does it bother you to see how some of these guys play the game, and in particular how they play it defensively?
Well, I don't – you know what? It's where the game is gone, and the home run is where you make your money. And I basically, a lot of us old timers like to call them batting cage major leaguers. They hit. I would never take that many swings. I always was the group that, and the camp that when you're in a hot streak, the Lord only gives you so many good red hot swings.
Right.
Don't waste them in the cage. You know, so there were games when I was red hot, I'd just take one round, get the hell out, and go out and take ground balls, you know, and just didn't want to waste them in the cage. But, you know, it's where the game is, home runs. They sacrifice defense. Gary Cohn made a very interesting point in our broadcast yesterday, my play-by-play guy, that usually the middle infielders used to have the bulk of the plays percentage-wise on the ground, ground balls, as opposed to the corner infielders, of course, right? They're up the middle. That now is almost, it was even last year, and that's to me, it's because you've got the advent of the LeMahieus at second base, big hitters, lack of range.
Sure.
So it's a sacrifice for defense, to me, the finer points of the game and one of the beauties of the game that go unnoticed in the box score, go unnoticed and sometimes in the papers in the morning or on the internet that are missing today, and just a sacrifice for offense for the defense gets sacrificed.
For our fans that are listening, you're a history buff. Is that how you keep yourself busy when you're not calling games?
I read a lot. I've always read a lot.
Yeah,
and I've read novels. I like English literature and as well as history. So in a season, it's hard for me to read. We're moving around all the time. You know how it is.
Yeah.
And but in the off season, I have 6 months off, and I have a lot of leisure time, and I read a lot in the off season.
Keith Hernandez is with us, and you have a chance to be part of the Cardinals Hall of Fame. What would it mean to you?
Oh, it would be fantastic. I would love that very much. I wish that, you know, if I'd have played my entire career in St. Louis, and I actually got better after 79 and 82. I think my best years, even though my best year on paper was 79 and 80, I think I became a better player in New York.
Why?
I became, as each year went by, I knew I was good.
Yeah.
And you get more confident. I was able to really refine my first base defensively. Everything just kind of fell into place as a veteran. And so I think it's just part of being in your prime and being a veteran, being confident in your abilities. And I did become better. I became a better situational hitter. I always was a good clutch hitter. I became better in the field. And I became better as far as and it may not have come out in St. Louis as much because we'd have been a veteran team. We'd have all gotten old together.
Sure.
But when I went over to New York, it was a young team, much like what Lou had when we were coming up, Gary Templeton, myself, Obie. You know, Lou was there for all that. And so that kind of fell on my lap there. It may not have fallen on my lap so it may not have been so profound if I'd have stayed in the Carter uniform, because we'd have had George, we'd have had Ozzie, right, and Willie, and we know all that. But anyway, it would be a great honor to be a part of that. I mean, it's a great Cardinal tradition, I would welcome that very much.
When you look at the National Baseball Hall of Fame and the premium now that's put on defense with sabermetrics, do you wish they'd review your case a little closer?
Well, the one sabermetric guy for ESPN, I can't think of, Brian Kenny.
Yeah.
Wrote the book. I'm in his book, and I'm the...
The preeminent defensive first baseman.
I'm the sabermetrics guy, on-base percentage.
Right.
Drove in runs. That was something that I always prided myself. My father always told me that you want to be the third hitter in the lineup. That's the prestigious, that in the cleanup spot. But your third hitter is your Clemente, your Tony Oliva, Bill Madlock. Your best hitter on the team and your clutch hitter, but he's also a guy that sets it up for the bombers behind him, which are the 4, 5, and 6. So I always prided myself on getting on base as well as driving in the runs. Most of my cleanup hitters behind me drove in 100 runs.
That's right.
And I scored 90-plus every year, so I'm proud of that. There's times when you get up to the plate, there's no men on base. Or you're in a situation to set up a big inning, the runner on first. I'm a left-hand hitter. I can set up a first and third easy, hitting
right,
the ball through the hole. And then you got the 4, 5, and 6 coming up. So it's a dual. That position in the order is dual, although that's changed today. It's launch angle and
right,
home runs.
You love sabermetrics, don't you?
Yes, I do. Well, there are some good things in there. There are some very good
launch angle. Come on.
Well, is that sabermetrics? I don't think that is. That
well,
is
that
a
was
dramatic
just part of the game.
That's a dramatic change in how they're.
I can only
hitters.
Imagine how you describe.
They would have ruined me. playing Old Busch Stadium?
There's no chance.
They never would have thought of that in Old Busch Stadium.
No way.
Or Houston Astrodome and the parks, a lot of the parks we played at.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm looking at it this way. And when I talked with Whitey when I was in town for your event in St. Louis over the winter, and I talked with Whitey, that's my cat, he's very friendly. Whitey said, the guys are getting bigger and stronger. They got these maple bats that are like lead pipes. And you would think they'd make the ballparks bigger. What do? They make them smaller. So, you know, if I'm playing in Houston and I got that short left field porch, or I'm playing in Yankee Stadium, I'd lift more.
Yeah.
I would certainly lift more. But
you'd probably change your swing.
Yep.
Maybe.
I would, on a pitch up, I would know how to lift it. But
yeah.
But they're teaching everybody. It's rote. Not everybody is the same. Everybody's different. You've got such distinct different styles. Manny Sanguin, a bad ball hitter. We can go Yogi Berra for that fact. You have bad ball hitters. Didn't walk. Hackers. They don't want that today. They want deep in the count, blah, 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 blah. No one can be the same. It is a fine line. And you can't bridle athletes. You can try to pull a little the reins on them a little bit, but it's a fine line where you take away from their innate ability, whether it is to hit the ball. And I just keep my mouth shut. I go to the park, I watch.
I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. If you're even considering buying a home this year, get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. Don't be the only offer on the table without a pre-approval letter from thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert LLC.
It drives me crazy when I see guys like yourself or Al Hrabowski, Rick Horton, who I work with, Tim McCarver, who played so many years, guys that have this great knowledge of the game, and yet the players of today don't approach them. And I don't know if they're told to. I don't know if they don't want to, but I don't understand, because you guys would be willing, I know all of you would be willing to say, yeah, I'll help you out. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I see. This is what you should do. Guys just don't do that, do they?
Well, I think a lot of it might be intimidation. I mean,
yeah.
I was around all those Cardinal Hall of Fame, those old-timer days when all the old-timers, and certainly the Cardinals have their had a great old-timers day when I was coming up, and you know, Johnny Mize and all that. You're a little intimidated by those great guys when you're a young player. But, you know, the first thing I did when I went over to – one of the first things I did when I got settled in New York – was that Ralph Kiner was doing games on TV and had been since 62. And we were on a flight, and I went and picked his brain one flight and talked about hitting with him. And just, you know, he was an entirely different hitter than me, you know, home run hitter, pull hitter. But, you know, you might pick a nugget out that makes sense. I didn't with Ralph, because Ralph said something very funny. I don't know if we have time, but
you can go as long as you want.
When you go in a slump, what did you do to get out of the slump? When you went to did your BP, your extra BP? Now me, I'd be out in front. I'd try to hit the ball over the shortstop's head, the opposite gap, drive it, and I was always out in front, try to bring it back. Ralph said he would try to pull the ball as far foul as possible. I said, "You're kidding me." And he goes, "No. I try to hit it into the left field seats down the left field line."
Why?
Pull, pull, pull. I mean, exaggerate my pull. And that made absolutely no sense to
right.
me. But it worked for Ralph.
Yeah.
So it's a funny game.
Tim McCarver was doing your broadcast in New York. I get the chance to work with Tim. I think he's the best that's ever done it. No offense. As an analyst.
Yes, I agree.
He is opinionated as they come.
Sure.
And he's as smart as they come
about
the game of baseball. What did you think when you were, and your teammates, listening to Tim at that time? Or did you pay attention? Did guys get mad? Did they ever approach him? What was it like having Tim?
Well, I tell you what, in our clubhouse at Old Shea, there was no TV in the clubhouse.
Okay.
There was a TV in the back eats room, which was really tiny. You can cram eight guys in there.
Right.
It's not like today. It was always the radio, so listening to I'm on the bench. But the guys on the bench and the pitchers, they're the ones that can the watch. I mean, the bullpen pitchers are the ones that got too much time in their hands.
Yes,
they cause the most problems. I over the course of my 17 years, as far as the team's concerned, they're always moaning and groaning. They're either pitching too much or they're not pitching enough, and they just got too much time on their hands. And it's a long, you know. I can imagine today it's even worse with 3.5, almost 4-hour games sitting out
Your
there.
Your favorites, I'm sure.
But I never paid attention. What Tim said, I'd come in once in a while, you know, if I wasn't going to hit that inning, if I made the last out, you know, I'd come in, get a whatever, a candy bar or whatever. And basically, when you walked in, I'd hear the radio. If I was a manager today, and I never will, I would not allow the TVs to be on during game time. I just the radio.
Really?
I don't want players to get all ticked off because a young player is very sensitive.
Yeah.
And, you know, broadcasters have a job to do. And, I mean, Tim could never criticize me. I played so well, you know, in New York.
Right.
But Daryl hated McCarver because McCarver called him Strawberry Patch because by June, Daryl never moved in right field. He called the Strawberry Patch. the grass got brown where Daryl never moved. He just sat in one spot in the outfield, and Tim brought that up, and Daryl wasn't too appreciative of that.
Yeah. Do you get a lot of heat from players? Because you're in a market where you got to say it. You got to be honest.
I had one altercation with Jose Reyes early. I almost got in a fight with him on an airplane. And after a game when he threw a little tantrum when he was younger.
Yeah.
And I was young as a broadcaster. And I was knee-jerk reacting. And, you know, if a player's hustling, you know, not everybody is a Ozzie Smith, you know, out there in the field, but if there's effort, you know, some players just aren't smart and they're limited, and then there's some players that have it all, and there's some that are sort of smart, but as long as they're trying, and I just try to not to beat a dead horse. I mean, if someone is putting an effort in, you just say it and don't go back and just wear it out. I mean, the power of the mic. I remember Boyer telling me about Harry Carey.
Oh, yeah.
The story about Boyer told Harry to put that mic where the sun don't shine. And but Harry Carey made his life
miserable.
Just radio the rest of his career. When
right.
Jack Buck told me that story. And when Jack was young and first joined Harry, and the first time he heard Harry do that, which was in Chicago, Boyer hit a bases loaded line drive to left field to Billy Williams to end the game. And Harry says, "A shallow fly ball to left field. We'll be back after this." And Jack looked at him. I said, "Oh my God, that's the kind of power you have."
Yeah. You, as far as getting along with the media, you, for the most part in New York, were able to do that.
Yes. I also performed.
And that's the difference.
And, you know, when I had bad days and I made errors, and they got to write about it, you know. When I was younger coming up, I was much more sensitive to criticism. I don't know if you remember Neil Russo, who wrote for the Post-Dispatch. He looked like Cheswick.
He did.
And One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Right.
So when Cuckoo's Nest came out, I was with Hector Cruz, and we both saw it together. We both saw it on the road, and there was a function we had. It was early in the season, and I was struggling. I don't know if it was 75 or 76. And I looked at Neil, and I just went, it just struck me, and I knee-jerk going, "Look at Neil, he looks like Cheswick." And he heard me. The next day, front page, I got to get sent down. Hernandez has had enough chances. It's time.
Is that right?
Oh, I'll never forget that as long as I live.
The power of the pen, the power of the microphone.
And Neil was a nice guy.
Yeah.
But Neil was going a little...
sure.
He was having a hard time at that point in his life. And but, you know, he knew my father from... my dad played in... for some reason, he knew my father. Maybe he worked down in Houston. My dad was with the Houston Buffs. But anyway, those are lessons learned as you're coming up the pike, you know?
I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. If you're even considering buying a home this year, get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. Don't be the only offer on the table without a pre-approval letter from thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert LLC.
Did you ever and have you ever talked to Bill Buckner after the play in 86?
I've seen Bill several times. I don't like to bring it up.
Does he ever bring it up?
He's made a lot of money with Mookie doing it.
He sure has.
On that play, but certainly I wouldn't want to be on that end of it.
No.
I don't think he's brought it up, and I certainly don't. I have empathy for him. He was a terrific player.
Yes, he was.
And a terrific hitter.
2,800 hits, I think.
But yes, he could play, and he had the bad ankles and all that. So, I don't like to bring that up around Bill, and I haven't seen him in a long time.
I actually worked a game with Preston, and Mookie was in there, and he and Bill actually had just gone on a fishing trip together. Those two have become obviously very close. Where were you when that happened, when it goes through
his
legs?
Well, you know where I was. I was in the dugout.
Yeah.
And in the clubhouse. And I made the second out on that inning. So all that stuff that transpired. I mean, I just figured, you know, we were done. I mean, the Mets organization thought we were done. They flashed on the scoreboard before the inning was over. Congratulations to the new 1986 world champion Boston Red Sox. And the game wasn't over.
I didn't know that.
And I was in the clubhouse and all that stuff was happening. I was with Daryl Johnson, who was our advanced scout, and ironically was the manager of the Red Sox that lost the World Series back in the 70s. And and Jay Horowitz, our PR guy. And I was in Davey's office, and we were watching. I was sitting on the chair, and all of a sudden Carter got a hit. And, you know, Mitchell was up in his locker, and Buddy Harrelson ran up and said, "What are you doing up here? You got a pinch hit?" Mitchell grabbed his hat, ran down the bench, grabbed his bat, and got a base hit for a swing. And it all happened after that. And I wasn't going to leave that chair. We were one out from elimination.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're superstitious, so I stayed and watched it with Jay and Daryl Johnson.
A couple more questions. Seinfeld, we have a lot of fans, obviously, in St.
Yes,
Louis. So
course.
You go to Seinfeld. You're known now as the Seinfeld guy and not one of the great baseball players, for God's sakes, in some circles.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Well, as I said before, baseball just touches the sports world, and the Seinfeld touched the whole country. It was the most popular sitcom, and I was very fortunate to get on there. Jerry was a Met fan. I was his favorite player. I guess he and Larry David thought they wrote it, the boyfriend, and it turned out to be one of the best episodes, if not the best. One of the depends on who you are, but certainly one of the better episodes.
And you enjoyed it?
I did not. It was a lot of horror. I never acted. It was a whole week of rehearsal. I mean, we were got there Monday, 7 a.m. call on Monday, and we weren't done until Saturday afternoon, late afternoon.
Tough to memorize the lines?
Yeah. I had a lot of lines, and I had the one grassy knolls,
right.
You know, the soliloquy, I guess, huh? And I remember I called Marsha Mason, who I had met in New York, and I asked her, I was petrified, and I said, I got a lot of lines. So she just said she helped me how to memorize lines. Line one, line two, then line one, line two, line three, and da 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 da. So I did. I realized on Monday it didn't take very long that this was very serious business. That I was just one show, and after I left, the next show comes in, and they had to do whatever shows there are, how many there are in a season,
right?
And that I better have my act together and not slow down production.
You have a book coming out.
Yes.
What is it? What's it about? I'm assuming it's about Keith Hernandez and his life.
It is. It's called, appropriately, I'm Keith Hernandez. And it's my autobiography. It bounces around. It's not in chronological order. But it's primarily my formative years. It stops, even though it does briefly go into Met years. It basically stops in 1980. That's when I realized in 1980 in April I was a major league player and a good one. So I felt they wanted 90,000 words. And when we got into my writer, Mike Ponce, and I got into the book, and I said, Mike, if we do everything up to the end of my career and into my broadcasting, this is going to be 800, 900 pages. It's well over 90,000 words,
right,
which is around 325 pages, which is what the book is. And, you know, people are going to get bored with it. So we decided on doing our formative year. So it's mainly a lot of Cardinal stuff. It's my minor leagues, my youth, obviously, with my father. We have that background coming up, my brother and I, the family, going to the minor leagues with the Cardinals, a lot of minor league stuff with the Cardinals. The years I struggled up to a lot of 1979, the battle with Pete Rose for the batting title of the last month of the season. That's a big part of the book. I'm happy with that. Bob Kennedy, all the people that were there to help me, Boyer.
So St. Louis fans would love it.
I think so, yes. The only thing I was disappointed in was that we didn't do a lot of 77, and that was obviously when Red got fired, and Rap came in and all that, and they edited that, and I just went, Little Brown, I called him. I said, well, why did you even deal with a 78? I go, 78, I had a bad year. I had a good first half, bad second half. I go, it wasn't that important. You mentioned 78 more than 77 with, you know, Vern Rapp and all that turmoil on that team. And also, it was a breakout year for me and a year of under a lot of pressure for me because Vern had Roger Fried waiting in the wings, this Bobo.
That's right.
He was going to put him in. I was under the gun. So I thought they missed the boat there. I wasn't happy with that. But, you know, it also sets up, if this book does well, there could be a sequel that will have my Met years. The World Series is hardly mentioned in it. And it's just to when I made it, because I remember in April, I was finally, I always had the bad Aprils, even had the bad April in 79, mm-hmm. 232. And that, I had a great April, and I knew that I was a major leaguer. And that's basically the gist. And my struggle, my insecurities, and all the Cardinal people that were there to help me. There'll be names that Cardinal people, Cardinal fans will know. And I think it captures, you know, the struggles of making it to the big leagues. Well, under when you had, I had a lot of expectations on me.
Absolutely. Why write it? Was it cathartic for you, or did you have a author come to you and say, or a writer and says, hey, I want to do it, or is this something that you always wanted to do?
I had a independent literary agent that had the idea to do this. And I've been approached before to do it.
Sure.
I just felt it wasn't the right time. I needed more time away and more time in the booth. And the game has dramatically changed so much. So we talk a lot about that in the book also. A lot of philosophizing, and not too much. So it was his idea, Ian Kleinert is his name, and he, the writer, Mike Ponce, is terrific. It's just his first big break, and the book is written kind of, it doesn't go in chronological order. It can go from 1980 back to 1974, even 1963, then pop into 1975, and I like the way that's done. I've read a lot of biographies, and you know, you can't get past the beginning when you're a kid.
Right.
You know, So I'm pleased with the book. It'll be out May 15th. That's when it'll be out, and it'll be on the bookshelves, and I'm sure it'll get a lot of fanfare. I'm in New York. I'll be able to do a lot of publicity for it.
You're the best. Thanks.
Okay. All right, Danny. Thanks. Always.
I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. If you're even considering buying a home this year, get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. Don't be the only offer on the table without a pre-approval letter from thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert LLC.
That was fun for me. Five-time All-Star, NL MVP in 1979. Batting champion that year as well. Keith Hernandez won 11 gold gloves, played on two World Series championship clubs. His book is out now, available at all major outlets where books are sold. One of my favorites. As always, this is presented by Ryan Kelly, the Home Loan Expert. Thanks for stopping in and visiting Scoops with Danny Mac.